Welcome to the Hemophilia edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the hemophilia community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, special correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking with Brian O'Mahony, CEO of the Irish Hemophilia Society. Brian was a speaker at a panel on gene therapy access, which took place during the recent European Society of Gene and Cell Therapies 2023 conference in Brussels. Brian, who was diagnosed at 1.5 years old with severe hemophilia B, is former president of the World Federation of Hemophilia and the European Hemophilia Consortium. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Brian.
You're welcome.
Let's hear your patient story on how you became an advocate for hemophilia.
Well, I grew up with hemophilia, had an interest in science, but there's quite a large family history of hemophilia in my family. I had three brothers with hemophilia, two of whom died in childhood from bleeding. I had four uncles and several cousins. So I pursued a career in medical laboratory science, went to college, and after 7 years of studying, I was looking forward to having some free time. And that was in 1982, and my uncle, who was on the board of the Irish Hemophilia Society, persuaded me to go on the board because I was a young man and I had some science knowledge. And he promised me it would be 1 year, 2 years at most, and I'm still there.
So you became a lifelong advocate for hemophilia patients.
Yes.
You mentioned this family history. Is hemophilia a particular problem in Ireland?
No more so than any other country, but in fact we do have a higher prevalence of hemophilia B than most countries. I guess a small population, small gene pool, founder effect, but I think we have the highest prevalence of hemophilia B per million population of any country.
In the world?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
And hemophilia B, of course, is not as common as A.
That's right.
What's the ratio?
Hemophilia A impacts 1.7 per 10,000 males. Hemophilia B, 1 per 30,000 males. So normally it's 80-20.
I see. And that being said, therapies for hemophilia B, it would seem to me, would be more difficult.
I suppose it's a smaller market, so there was less money poured into development over the years. So for many, many years, hemophilia B therapy was lagging behind. So when you had cryoprecipitate developed for factor VIII deficiency, you still had plasma for hemophilia B. And then when you had factor VIII concentrate developed, we had prothrombin complex concentrate, a mixture of 2, 7, 9 and 10 for B. It wasn't until quite late there was a pure factor IX concentrate. And then a recombinant 8 was developed before recombinant 9. And the first time that hemophilia B actually stepped ahead of hemophilia A was with the evolution of the extended half-life factor concentrates. Because of the link to von Willebrand factor, factor 8 is limited in the extension of the half-life, but hemophilia B was not. So you certainly had an EHL factor 9 product, which gave you a half-life extension 3 to 5-fold compared to 50% with factor 8. So that was a big innovation in hemophilia B.
Now, you mentioned, you started out your presentation by saying that you are lucky to live in a country, you said, where we have extremely good hemophilia care.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, first of all, we've got really well organized hemophilia care. After the contaminated blood scandal in the past, we had an inquiry. We used the inquiry very effectively to change the way decisions were made in the future.
This was in the early 80s.
The contamination was 80s, 90s, but the inquiry was in 2000. But after the inquiry, we persuaded the government to establish a statutory National Hemophilia Council. And there was also a Hemophilia Product Selection and Monitoring Board, which I sit on. I sit on both bodies. And really, so we frame policy on hemophilia. We're also responsible for selection and procurement of the products for hemophilia treatment in Ireland. And in Ireland, we were the first country in the world to switch all patients to extended half-life factor 8 and factor 9 in 2017. And we were one of the first countries to make emicizumab an optional treatment for anybody with hemophilia A who wanted it in 2019. So I think we've got very good treatment. We treat everybody with factor 9 deficiency with extended half-life factor 9. everybody with factor VIII deficiency is treated with extended half-life factor VIII or emicizumab, depending on their individual choice. We use high doses, we use aggressive treatment, and practically everybody is on prophylaxis.
Now, this is very interesting. Since we're at a gene therapy conference, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the development of gene therapy for hemophilia. You mentioned that there are two licensed gene therapies at the moment, yet the number of patients who are treated can be counted on the fingers of one hand. Why is that?
Well, first of all, the therapies were licensed several months ago. You're quite correct. I think one of the reasons is, and we'd flagged this a couple of years ago, you know, if you've got a very expensive therapy, and you come to the health ministry with this or the payer, they're going to have concerns about paying a one-off cost because of the huge potential budget impact. So countries need to start thinking about different payment mechanisms and perhaps thinking about annual payment mechanisms or outcome-based payment mechanisms for a one-off treatment. Now, many systems don't allow for an annual payment for a one-off treatment. We flagged this about 3 years ago, but of course countries only start thinking about this once the products are actually licensed. So I think one of the delays is because of the complex negotiations and discussions around reimbursement in many countries. I think a second delay is, obviously in Europe there's an agreed hub and spoke model, so gene therapy should only be dosed and should only be primarily supervised and decisions made by hub centres. And so it's figure out which centres will be hub centres, which centres will be spoke or supporting centres. And a third reason, I think, is innate caution. I mean, this is a one-off therapy that you cannot repeat, that you can only get once in your life.
We're talking here about Hemgenix.
We're talking about Hemgenix or Roctavian. So once you get these therapies, your antibody titer, the vector, will go through the roof. So you can't currently be redosed. This is a one-off therapy. You get this one time. You can't be redosed. You can't get a second shot at this if you don't get a good outcome. So it's a very considered decision. So I think I'm not concerned, because I think it needs to be a fully informed decision by the person with hemophilia. It needs to be definitely a shared decision-making process between that individual and the clinician and the hospital. So I think taking a little bit of time is no harm.
Brian, one last thing before we wrap up. One of the biggest problems, of course, with gene therapy and hemophilia is the fact that many patients have pre-existing antibodies.
Yes.
And you mentioned that in India, for example, 90% of hemophilia patients have these antibodies. Therefore, that precludes them from gene therapy of any kind.
India, China, and South Africa all have extremely high pre-existing antibody titers to the AAV vector. My understanding as well is you've got a lot of cross-reactivity. So if you've got antibody positivity to one AAV, it really precludes you from getting any other AAV therapy. So for a large proportion of the hemophilia population in those countries, the current generation of AAV vector-based gene therapies are not going to be a runner. But in fact, as I said in my presentation, India is doing a clinical trial on lentivirus gene therapy, and I think they'll look to future generations.
Thank you very much for your time, Brian. I appreciate it. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.